Hare Krishna. Okay, so today we're reading from the fifth canto, the seventh chapter, text number 10 and 11, the activities of King Bharat. And as yesterday, it is a prose verse. And I won't even attempt 11. I will try 10. 10 is on the board. So pray for me. Yatra ashram padanyad udhayato nabhipir drishach chakrais chakranadi nama sarit pravara sarvata pavitri karoti. Hare Krishna. So someone else want to try? Go for it.
Yatra ashrama padanyubayato narivir drishat chakrais chakranadi nama sarit pravara sarvata pavitri karoti.
Aye. Somebody else?
Yatra ashrama padani ubayato navir drishat chakrais chakranadi nama sarit pravara sarvata pavitri karoti.
Yatra shrama padani ubayato navir drishat chakrais chakranadi nama sarit pravara sarvata pavitri karoti.
Hare Krishna. When we were reading these verses in Alachua, the discussion came up that in Sanskrit, every word is a song. So even though it's written in prose, it should be chanted melodically. But we have the skills. Okay, so yatra, where? Ashram padani. Oops, sorry. All hermitages. Ubhayata. Both on top and below. Nabibi. Like the symbolic mark of a navel. Drishat. Visible. Chakrai. With the circles. Chakranadi. The Chakranadi River, generally known as the Gandaki. Nama, of the name. Sarit Pravara, the most important river of all. Sarvata, everywhere. Pavitri Karoti, sanctifies. In Pulaha Ashram is the Gandaki River, which is the best of all rivers. The Shalagram Shila, the marble pebbles purifying all those places. On each and every marble pebble, up and down, circles like navels are visible. Purport. Shalagram Shila refers to pebbles that appear like stones with circles marked up and down. These are available in the river known as Gandaki Nadi. Wherever the waters of this river flow, the place becomes immediately sanctified. And we're going to read text 11 as well. I'll just read the word for word. And Tasmin, in that ashram, Vavakila, indeed, Sa Bharat Maharaj, Ekla, alone or only. Pulaha Ashram Upavani, in the garden situated in Pulaha Ashram. Vividha Kushuma Kishalaya, we'll take it in parts. You'll never get it all together unless you have it written. Vividha Kushama Kishalaya. Tulasika Ambubi. with varieties of flowers, twigs, and tulsi leaves, as well as with water. Kandamula pala upaharai. By offerings of roots, bulbs, and fruits. Cha and samihamana. Performing Bhagavata of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Aradhanam. Worshipping. Vivikta. Purified. Uparata. Being freed from. Vishaya Abhilasa. Desiring for material sense enjoyment. Ubabritya. Increased. Upashama. Tranquility. Param. Transcendental. Nivritim. Satisfaction. Avapa. He obtained. Translation. In the gardens of Pulah Ashram, Maharaj Bharat lived alone and collected a variety of flowers, twigs, and tulsi leaves. He also collected the water of the Gandaki River, as well as various roots, fruits, and bulbs. With these, he offered food to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, and worshipping him, he remained satisfied. In this way, his heart was completely uncontaminated, and he did not have the least desire for material enjoyment. All material desires vanished. In this steady position, he felt full satisfaction and was situated in devotional service. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Everyone is searching after peace of mind. This is obtainable only when one is completely freed from the desire for material sense gratification and is engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Patrang Pushpang Palang Toyang Yome Bhaktya Prayachati. Worship of the Lord is not at all expensive. One can offer the Lord a leaf, a flower, a little fruit, and some water. The Supreme Lord accepts these offerings when they are offered with love and devotion. In this way, one can become freed from material desires. As long as one maintains material desires, he cannot be happy. As soon as one engages in the devotional service of the Lord, his mind is purified of all material desires. Then one becomes fully satisfied. Savai pung sang paro dharmo yato bhaktir atokshaje hai chuki apratiyata yayatma supersiddhati vasudeve bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojitaha janayatyashu vairagyam jnanam cha yad ahai chukam. The supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. Srimad Bhagavatam 1, 2, 6, and 7. These are the instructions given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the supreme Vedic literature. One may not be able to go to Pulaha Ashram, but wherever one is, one can happily render devotional service to the Lord by adopting the process is mentioned above. Om Agnati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru and Militang Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Mukam karati vachalam pangam langaya tegarim yat kripa tvam aham vande shri guru dinatanam. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Nivishesha Srinivadi Prashtacha Vyasatane. So last night, you know, sometimes I answer letters for Krishna.com, and just the other day I got a letter. I answered it yesterday evening. And then the same person wrote me back. But in the letter he said, I'm sick and tired of the Christian God, so I've decided to switch gods. And your God looks interesting. And I've been reading a little bit and looking at pictures. He's very beautiful. So I thought I would find out some more information and see if your God works for me. He said, when I was worshiping the Christian God, I found so many difficulties. Hypocritical people, and on he went. And they're all evil and demoniac, and I feel I need to switch gods. So I wrote him, my first sentence was, actually, God is only one God. And I think you had problems with his fan club, not with him. So you should consider that, you know, whatever way that you what works for you to bring you closer to the devotional service of God, this is the system that you should take. So if you found that this system of Christianity wasn't working for you for whatever reason, then please take up the process of devotional service to Krishna. But understand that it requires work. It's a serious engagement. It's not like you're going to switch teams and then immediately everything will be perfect and all the people involved will be just fine and everything will be, you know, okay. So here in this verse, it's explained that Krishna, he accepts our worship. And it's very simple. How to worship Krishna, patram pushpam palam toyam. So with a little bit of love and devotion, one can offer God sincere service in the form of fruits and flowers and roots and so many other things that sometimes when you're living in Slovenia, they might be a little expensive, but not so expensive. Not, you don't need a lot of money. You can worship Krishna with whatever you have. Flowers are abundant and leaves are abundant. Tulsi is growing here. We can worship him. But in order to worship him, we have to get to know him. And this is what I wrote this boy. I said, first you need to get to know God a little bit. It's not just about the ritual and the, you know, going to the temple. Yesterday there was a description of the Kanishta Adhikari that he goes to the temple and it's a very official kind of program. So if that official program lets you down, then you have you have nothing to fall back on because you don't really know God. There isn't any understanding of God's presence and God's involvement in the world or in your life. So I suggested, why don't you chant Hare Krishna and get to know God personally a little bit and read some books. I recommended Bhagavad Gita. If you read and you chant, then simultaneously by reading and chanting, you'll get to know God and then you'll have a relationship with him and you'll be more tolerant of the problems of his fan club. Because any fan club has its ups and downs, I'm afraid. Even in our International Society for Krishna Consciousness, there are difficulties in the fan club. And if we get disturbed by those difficulties, then we tend to depend very much on our own knowledge, our own understanding, our own determination, and we wind up friendless, which is what was spoken about yesterday, how we become isolated. Because we become frustrated. In the material world, there's always inebrieties. And if we, like, there's an expression I heard that it comes from in old English or old French times that they used to only take baths very infrequently. And so the water would become cloudy because of taking so many baths in the same water. And so then sometimes the expression would come, it would become so cloudy that you'd throw the baby out with the bathwater. Because you couldn't see the baby in the bathwater. So if our consciousness becomes cloudy and we can't see the reality because we're looking at the illusion and thinking it's the reality, then we become in a very problematic state. And we tend to turn off those things which are necessary for our spiritual advancement because they're put there for our learning experience. And one thing that came to mind when studying the Leela of Bharat Maharaj and his gradual transformation into Judd Bharat and ultimately his ascent to the spiritual world is that Maya is the security force of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She's very good at what she does. Sometimes we make Maya seem like some kind of witch, some kind of demon, and even sometimes she's called a witch. But the fact is that Maya is a great devotee. And she, actually, when you go to Mayapur and you go to Jagannath Mandir, you'll see Samanta Dweep and the deity of Samanta Devi. And there's this story that she, Maya Devi was very disappointed because she came to Krishna, and she said, everybody's allowed to come into the holy dham but me. I can't go and worship you because I have this horrible job of being your security force. And so, give me some mercy. So she was given the mercy to enter into the holy dham. And, of Mayapur, which is Ordarya Dham, which is this place also, very merciful. So this job that Maya Devi has, she takes it very, very seriously. And her job is to keep the riffraff out of the spiritual world. So as we progress in spiritual life, the tests that she gives us become more and more fine-tuned to our particular need. She examines our heart. And she examines us, and she sees what our weaknesses are. And then she tests us to remove those weaknesses, to bring us forward on the path to devotional service, so that eventually we can enter into the spiritual world. But we won't get past her. We can't think that we can get past her. It's not possible to get past her. The only way to get past her is we get a special pass by, you know, Srila Prabhupada's mercy, the Guru's mercy, or by Krishna's mercy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. But generally they work in concert. And, you know, the path that we have to traverse is crafted specifically to address our attachments and to remove them from our heart. Sometimes the surgery is a little bit difficult. And it's painful. But it's where we have to go, and it's what we need to advance in devotional service. And we see it very often in the activities of the devotees. We saw it with the Pandavas, we see it with Prahlad. So many different devotees, they don't have it easy. They go through different things. And their heart is purified, or remains pure, and we learn from their example. Bhagavatam is a very, you know, it has a lot of supernatural activities in the Bhagavatam. But in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we get more of a look at, you know, the reality that we're kind of used to. And even there, the devotees are tested. Even Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas Thakur, they were trying to preach Krishna consciousness and ran into Jagai and Madai and got chased through the streets of Navadvipa. And Haridas Thakur was saying, you crazy man, why are you doing this? Why can't we just go to sane people? Why do we have to go to demoniac people and get chased around? They're going to kill us. But the devotee is eager to please the Lord, and the Lord is eager to reciprocate, and Maya is there to test. So here we have this wonderful devotee, Bharat Maharaj, and as was described yesterday, he's friendless. He's going alone. He's going alone in more ways than just being friendless. He's going alone because he didn't ask anybody for blessings to go. He just went. And so he went to this very transcendental place, and he was engaged in devotional service, and he was a king. So he had this tendency to protect. It was his inclination as a ruler, as a king. His inclination was to be a Kshatriya, which means to protect people, or protect the living entities in his kingdom. And so that tendency also became a weak point. And as would have it, the circumstances were arranged to test that. And apparently he failed the test. Now, on the overt level, of course, these things are going on. Later we'll see that, you know, Bharat Maharaj was so advanced that there's a lot of leela here. But on the but still, the stories in the Bhagavatam are there to teach us lessons. And the lesson here, one of the lessons, there's many lessons, but one of the lessons here is that we should never become complacent. We should never become sure of ourselves or confident of ourselves that now I'm cool and I can just go along doing my devotional thing, whatever it is. I'm waking up every morning. I'm going to the temple. I'm chanting my rounds, basically. And I'm reading every day something. I'm associating somewhat with devotees and I'm okay. And as soon as you think you're okay, watch what happens. It often happens very swiftly. Because as soon as we think that we're okay, then that we've reached a kind of plateau where we can be comfortable in our practices, then Maya will offer some tests. The material energy will jump in and show us that we're not really as okay as we thought we were. We're not really as okay as we thought we were. And some lesson will come. And the question is, will we learn the lesson? Will we take the lesson as a lesson and rise to the occasion at some point? We see here with Judd Bharat that he didn't really get it until his next life. Actually, until he was in the womb of a deer, or he just before his birth as a deer, he thought, oh no, I'm a deer. I blew it. I had made so much advancement engaging in devotional service, and now look what happened. I became attached to a deer, and now I'm taking the body of a deer. And so he made a resolution that he wasn't going to do the same thing again, and so he went to an ashram, and he lived with the sages. He heard from them in the form of a deer. Every day he heard, and obviously he was eating only very simply and undergoing his austerities in a deer's body. But he had some special mercy in that he had some memory of the situation. And he was able to keep that memory in front of him. Don't make this mistake again. Don't make this mistake again. So, Jai Panchatattva. So in his next birth, again, he was given another opportunity. And he again was remembering. So this situation is played out for each devotee sometimes in any given day. In any given day, we may become complacent. We may become comfortable. We may think we're all right. And then we get a test. And sometimes the tests are very strong. They're very heavy. We used to say amongst the devotees that Prabhupada would never yell at you unless you were very advanced. He would yell at the most advanced devotees. Actually, once I sat in Shutakirti Prabhu and Harisari Prabhu were having a competition who got yelled at the most by Srila Prabhupada. And they were telling stories, and then Harisari told a story that he was in Vrindavan. And I don't know how many of you know, but Prabhupada's house in Vrindavan has a second floor. Actually, when we were talking to Krishna Chetra Maharaj and Chandramali Maharaj, they were even saying that they didn't realize that Prabhupada's house had a second floor, and they had just recently discovered that there was a room upstairs where Prabhupada used to sleep. And originally that room didn't have a bathroom. It was just a little room, very small, and Prabhupada would come outside and go downstairs. So one day, Harisari, you know how habitually you walk out and you do things sometimes, especially when you're under pressure and you're in a hurry, and he didn't think, and he locked Prabhupada in the room from the outside. Right? He slid the door. You know how the doors in India, they have these sliding bolts on the outside of the room. So he walked out of the room, and he just inadvertently slid the door closed, locked. So Prabhupada was in the room, and then he had to go to the bathroom, and he couldn't get out of the room. So he was calling out the window on the balcony, you know, get Harisari. Someone went to Harisari Prabhu and said, you know, I think you're in trouble. Prabhupada looks pretty angry. What happened? You know, he's calling for you. And then Harisari somehow realized that, oh my gosh, I think I locked Prabhupada in there. And so we ran upstairs and he let Prabhupada out. And he said that Prabhupada, when he was most angry, he wouldn't talk to you at all. He just wouldn't say anything. And then you knew you were really in trouble. So they were having this competition and he was telling the story and then Shrutikirti said, you win. Because they were competing who got yelled at the most. He was saying, I got in the most trouble. You win. But Krishna also gives us tests that are commiserate with our level of advancement and his desire to overcome the last final attachments that we have in the material world and get them out of our heart so that we can make the necessary purification so that we can attain pure devotional service. So this is partially an example of what's happening to Judd Bharat. That he had this little inclination in his heart, which was coming from his desire or his feeling of being a protector, a king. And so when he got to take care of this little deer, that tendency to be the supreme protector kind of came out. And so much so it came out that he neglected the affection for this deer grew and grew and grew, and it overshadowed his inclination for doing his devotional activity. So the one of the things we need to learn from this is to protect ourselves from this inclination. Protect our, not necessarily the inclination to be the supreme protector, but whatever inclination we have that we find supersedes our willingness or our aspiration, our desire, our tendency to continue to be strict in our devotional practices, to feel neophyte no matter how long we've been around. Actually, we've been around in the material world for a long time, for a very, very long time, for eons, for births and births and births and births. And throughout that time that we've been around, we've been accumulating different kinds of karmic reactions. We've acted foolishly in different births, in different animal bodies, in different human bodies. We've acted foolishly. And our false ego is coming with us, right? Birth after birth, the false ego, the mind, it comes with us. And so we have this baggage that we take with us from birth to birth. And the process of devotional service is the process of purifying that, of taking away those karmas, of taking away those attachments, of transferring our love from material things to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so, you know, 50 years, 1 year, 10 years, 20 years, 100, you know, however long we find ourselves practicing Krishna consciousness, we should never think, well, that's long enough. Many devotees speak of how they came to Krishna consciousness, especially initially, because Prabhupada initially made Krishna consciousness sound very simple. When he was preaching, you know, he would tell us that, you know, all you have to do is just chant your rounds. Just chant 16 rounds. And then I guarantee you'll go back to Godhead in this lifetime. And we thought, okay, 16 rounds, no problem. So we were thinking, oh, it's in a year, I'll be a pure devotee. Maybe 6 months, you know, if I really try hard, then I'll make it. Everything will be taken care of and I'll go back to Godhead. But now, we see that even after 50 years, 48 years, we're still struggling. And actually more now we see the struggle. Right? Before we didn't notice the struggle so much. But now we see, we have some vision that we can really see the muck, the crap that's in the heart. And it's a kind of depressing, realization to understand that after 50 years or 48 years of devotional practice, you're just starting to understand how far you have to go. You know, how far you have to go and how complicated the procedure is, because it's not just about you. You can't do it yourself. You need a lot of things to do it. You need a lot of help. You need a lot of help from your friends. We used to have a song, I'm going to get by with a little help from my friends. So, you know, this idea of having friendship, of having mentors Tonight we'll start the disciples course, of being a disciple in more ways than one, of being disciplined and of being submissive, of coming in contact with the need to take shelter of the Vaishnavas. And to see that these Vaishnavas, no matter how much you may notice their difficulties, they're there to help you. They're there to teach you. They're there to inspire realizations in you, and you need them. You need them. And so if you offend them, if you ignore them, if you push them out of your life, and in arrogance you think that you can make spiritual advancement maybe better without them, then you're in trouble. And ultimately, you're going to find out the hard way that you're in trouble. Because Maya will be there, and she will test you. And you won't have any help. You won't have any body to assist you, to guide you, to see, just like Judd Barrett was explained yesterday, he didn't have anybody. Maybe if there was some friends there, they would have said, hey, don't you think you're taking this deer thing a little bit to the extreme? Do you notice that you're not, you know, you're missing your sadhana? You're not, doesn't appear that you're paying much attention. You're being distracted. Maybe you get a grip on this. Let this deer, you know, he's a natural, he's a deer. He lives in the forest. Just let him go. But he didn't have that association. And we see that many times we get into this idea that we will be better off alone. Just like this boy, he was thinking, you know, the devotees, they're just a pain in the neck. You know, they get in the way. They take so long in the shower, and I have to wait, and they chant japa funny loud, and I can't hear my rounds, and you know, they eat too much, and they eat too little, and they talk about whatever they talk. It's just whatever. And so I minimize the value of this association. How many of you have siblings, brothers or sisters? Do you ever fight with your siblings? Ever fight with your siblings? Or are you always just good friends? Usually we fight with our siblings, and at the same time we love them very much, right? We can fight with them. We can call them every name. We can pull their hair. We can punch them in the nose. We can take their toys away. But if someone else comes and tries to hurt our siblings, then hey, wait a minute. This is my brother. This is my sister. You can't mess with my sister. Get away from my sister. But if I get with my sister, I take her stuff away and I make fun of her and I I do all kinds of stuff. So this is what it's like in the association of devotees, that these are our brothers and sisters. And they've assembled here to be the agents of our karma, to help us to become devotional practitioners, to become serious devotees. And if we don't associate with anybody, then we're left alone with just our mind. And if we associate with only devotees or mostly devotees, then obviously they're going to be the ones who are going to teach us the lessons we need to learn. And those lessons may sometimes be a little bit prickly. They may be a little prickly. We may not feel so comfortable. But they have to teach us those lessons. That's why they're here. And we need to learn those lessons. We need to learn tolerance. We need to learn love. We need to learn how to lovingly serve. Unfortunately, because it's Kali Yuga, we tend to put up barriers. And those barriers prevent us from making our own spiritual advancement. We put up these walls and we think we're keeping problems out, but the reality is that we're keeping the problems in an insulated way. And we slow down our spiritual advancement. So we have to guard against this inclination. At the same time, as soon as we become attached to somebody or something in the material world, even then we become vulnerable, right? I got another letter just last night, just before I went to bed. I didn't answer it, but I had written somebody something about controlling the mind. He had written a letter, how to control the mind, in two sentences or less, to tell him how to control the mind. So he wrote me back, and he said, thanks for the letter, it was great, but the real problem is that I fell in love with a girl. And then she ran off with another guy. And now I can't serve Krishna anymore because I can't think of anything except this girl. Can you tell me how to not do that? What should what should I do now? You know, I have this problem, and I can't. And so, but the girl is only one thing. That's been going on since time immemorial, right? There's so many books and so many movies and so many songs about how I loved this person, and then my heart was broken, and he went away with somebody else, and now I'm want the door painted black, and I can't, and I don't want to see anything or anybody, and I'm just, you know, miserable, and I get into being miserable. So this is the nature of the material world. This is what you're going to find in the material world. It's just the way it is. So get used to it, deal with it, and go on, because the solution to the problem is removing that attachment, being able to have relationships without making them contaminated by material attachment. To have loving relationships with devotees based on service to Krishna, not on making myself feel good or making myself rubbing my false ego, massaging my false ego, making me feel really nice. And then when that doesn't happen, then I get angry and I get upset and I want to push everybody out of my life. So even having friendships in devotional service is an art. And it requires, at the same time as having genuine loving attachment, we also have to be very careful not to make it material attachment. And it's very easy for us to slip into material attachment and detachment. The other day we were talking with some devotees about the idea of aversion being the other side of attachment. Sometimes we mistake aversion for renunciation. But actually, aversion is not renunciation. Renunciation is neutrality. That this thing, I'll take it or leave it, depending on how it will support my devotional life. If it supports my devotional life, I'll take it. And if it doesn't support my devotional life, I'll leave it. But in itself, it has no positive or negative charge. As soon as we put a negative charge on it, then it's attachment, only it's the other side of attachment. It's aversion. And it just means that I'm attached to not having it. So if we become attached to not having association because we think it's going to cause us some difficulty, then we're not detached, really. We're attached to something not being in our life. And that will cause us difficulty. Another important thing in this purport, where are my timelines? I moved the clock and now, is these two verses that are quoted from the Bhagavatam. And these two verses that are quoted from the Bhagavatam are the answer to the second question that the sages asked, that the sages of Nanmasharanya asked. And they asked, give us the essence. You know, Kali Yuga's coming. We're all lazy, misguided, unfortunate. We have no memory. We're spaced out. We need to you to summarize the essence of the Bhagavatam for us, for the people of Kali Yuga. And these two verses are the summary that was given to them. And so we have this idea that this essence of the Bhagavatam in these two verses, that by rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. When I was thinking of that immediately, and then the first sentence or the second sentence here, in the purport, this is obtainable only when one is completely free from the desire for material sense gratification. So, completely free, and as soon as one engages in devotional service, one immediately feels, these kind of words make us feel, if we think about them, that we still have a ways to go. Right? We still have a ways to go. Because we're not feeling necessarily completely satisfied. And if we're not feeling completely satisfied, and it says if we engage in devotional service, pure devotional service, we'll immediately be satisfied, then we must be doing something wrong. There's something missing from our practice. And looking from that thing personally, instead of looking at the practice, looking at ourselves and seeing what in our heart remains to be removed, will help us engage in devotional service. And by good association also, that surgery will be more easily performed. So, I guess it's kind of late and I should stop here, but this idea of not becoming complacent, of remaining at the edge, at the cutting edge in our devotional life, always looking within our heart to see what we have to do to go the next step, to see what lessons are being given to us by the association we have, by the people in our lives, by the circumstances in our lives, what Krishna is trying to teach us, and willingly accept those lessons, no matter how painful they are. These things are the impetus for us to move forward in devotional service. For one serious about Krishna consciousness, Krishna is directly involved, and Maya Devi also is directly involved in crafting experiences and life events in order to purify our heart. And if we accept those things with gratitude, with an attitude of gratitude, and an attitude of appreciation, and an open heart, then we will make rapid advancement. And if we close ourselves to those things, we'll push out those very things which are there to help us, and our progress will be very slow. And it will be our own fault. So I'll stop there. Thank you very much. If there's any question, I can try to answer. Yes, Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
Thanks for the lecture. You were again speaking on the importance of devotee association. Mm. But from my experience, I noticed that there is a limit what friendly devotee can do. On one hand, we have to stand on our own in devotional service. But sometimes I meet people who are so hurt. And keeping this shield of I don't know, being tough, but at the same time they are reaching out for some help, but they don't have the confidence that somehow surrendering to instructions of the devotees will hold them, will help them. They are so far from previous experience.
Mm-hmm.
And also because of distorted vision, they interpret some devotees' actions as an attack and things like that. And maybe there is some attack somewhere, some another.
Mm.
Can you explain something about standing on your own? And what can we do in such cases when somebody is extremely hurt and needs some hugging? What to do in such cases?
Excellent question. So the first part, standing on your own. At the moment of death, we have to fly our own plane. Although Srila Prabhupada told us that he would meet us. He said, when you leave, I was with Sridhar Swami just before he passed away in Mayapur. And he said to me, you know what, Lakshmi Muni? You know what I heard? I said, no. He said, well, I heard that when you go back to Goloka Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada meets you at the entrance. And he takes you by the hand, and he brings you to the forest, and he calls Krishna, and then he puts your hand in Krishna's hand, and then he goes away and leaves you there with Krishna. He said, pretty scary, huh? But really, it's not so scary. We have to understand that we need guidance, we need help on the ground. And at the end, we have to take that guidance and amalgamate it into our own spiritual practice so that it becomes ours. It becomes part of us. And it assists us in our devotional practice. And at the same time, the relationship with our spiritual masters is eternal. And so although on our own we have to take up the process, we have to do what we can do, in the end it depends on mercy. And in the end it depends on Krishna's mercy and the mercy of Guru. And so that never ends. That never goes away. The Krishna is always there rooting for us in our private, when we're, you know, how the teams have their, what is it, the cheering squad. So Krishna is always in our cheering squad. And Guru is also there. And Srimati Radharani is also there. They're wanting us to make it. And so they're always there praying for us, hoping for us. And that prayer and that active participation in our lives we may not notice it. There's a Christian prayer that says, something like, I was walking, in the sand, and suddenly I saw one footprint. I can't remember. Anyway, where were you? And God says, that was when I was carrying you on my back. So we understand that Krishna is there helping us, and so at the same time we have to do what we have to do. We have to fly our own plane. We can't be passive. We have to be active in our devotional practice. And at the same time, we have to know that there's mercy there, and we have to call on that mercy. Now, for the second part of your question, which is a very real thing, surrender is very difficult. In the age of Kali, surrender is very difficult, especially because we're damaged. And everybody is damaged. The material world is malicious. When you look outside, it's aggressively against devotional practice. You know, it's funny, I don't know if I should say, but I studied media awareness, and I often have given seminars on what media does to your brains, and why you should avoid media as much as possible. Of course, you can't avoid media completely, because if you drive down the street, you see billboards everywhere, right? And that's media, and they're sending messages. And those messages are not always straight up. Sometimes they're what we call subliminal. They're underneath. And, you know, in America, it got to a point where many years ago it was becoming more and more a cry from the population. You know, we don't like this. And so it became more and more subtle. But here and in Serbia, some of it is very, very obvious to me. And when I see it, it's like shocking to me that other people don't get it. That it's so sexually connotated, even though it appears to be something maybe else, especially liquor advertisements. They're so phallic, and they're so sending sexual messages that it's actually quite scary when you look at them. So we're being programmed all the time, even beyond our personal experiences. There's so much hate in the world, and now we have the privilege, because we let it into our life, right? You walk into someone's house, and their deity is a television set. That's the first thing. That's what they worship. They spend all their day in front of this machine. And, you know, as much as we try to move into a good neighborhood where we won't see violence, where we won't see horrible things, we bring it into our living room. Hundreds and thousands of acts of violence every day, we see. And as much as we're trying to maintain material detachment, we bring all this information about how we need so many material things in order to be happy. Coca-Cola, grab happiness. Grab happiness. That's what all you have to do. Grab a bottle of Coke. Grab happiness. So there's so many different ways that we become miserable. We become cheated. We become lied to. People are telling us we don't trust the media. We don't trust the news, right? It's so many lies. The news that you hear here is different than the news I hear in America, even though they're reporting the same exact event. Because the perspective is different, and the way they want you to think is different. So we're programmed to be afraid, to be non-trusting. And then we come into Krishna consciousness, and trust and love and surrender is the key that lets us in to devotional practice. Without it, we cannot go forward. What a problem. What a problem we have. So we have to learn to develop trust, and it's a hard process. It takes concerted effort, and it takes baby steps, little efforts to explore the idea of surrender until our muscles for surrender grow and our realizations of what surrender means in the ultimate reality come clear in our mind. It's not an instant thing, and we should give it the time it needs. This is one thing we'll discuss in the Disciples Course. Don't be in a hurry to take a position of surrender when you're not really surrendered. Because surrender is something that you have to cultivate. It's something that has to grow in your heart. And it will be tested, and you need to pass the test. So you should be patient with yourself, because from the lifetimes, what to speak of this lifetime, your trust has been damaged. Your faith has been damaged. And you need to repair it. And you need to put it unconditionally in someone else's hands. That's not such an easy thing to do. It's really not an easy thing to do. So little by little by little, we develop love and trust. Prabhupada wanted our movement to be based on love and trust. But it's a hard thing for us to do. We don't trust each other. And we're very quick to blame other people and put labels on other people and criticize others and blame other situations. But the difficulty is really here. You know, other people are going through what they're going through and you're going through what you're going through, and that's just the way it is. So learning to trust, finding the people in your life that you can really trust, that you can surrender to, that's the process of the guru-disciple relationship, is developing the ability to surrender, to fall. And it's not so easy. Now, Arjuna got it together in 18 chapters. And what they say is a 45-minute conversation. Of course, you know that, again, there's that Leela aspect of things. But at the beginning, he was reluctant to surrender to this particular instruction. And after 45 minutes, he was willing to say, okay, karisye vachanam tava, I'll do what you say. But for most of us, it takes a lot more than 45 minutes. And we need to keep working on it. And to keep a positive attitude, to understand, like we were discussing last night in Bhagavad Gita class, that Krishna is in control. That he gives us the knowledge, he gives us the remembrance, he gives us the forgetfulness, he gives us the key to get out, he's working with us. And that's really where we need to put our trust. That's the top level. If we can trust that God is in control, then we can understand that everything is happening by God's arrangement. And we can remain faithful no matter what. Right? The Pandavas remained faithful, no matter, even though they were in such difficult situations. They never turned and thought, hey, what's going on here? Why are you letting these things happen? I thought you were our friend. I thought you were, you know, wanted us to be in charge here, so why don't you just do it? Why are you making us go through all this stuff? But they had so much faith in Krishna that even when it was difficult in the material sphere, they were able to separate the spiritual need of the day and the material, what was happening on the ground, and see how they were connected in terms of lessons to be learned, rather than in terms of showing you I love you by, you know, making everything a bed of roses. So I was saying the other day, I heard a wonderful class from Devamrita Maharaj in Mayapur, and he was saying that every devotee wants a very easy spiritual life, and then they want to die in their sleep and go back to Godhead. That's what we expect. We think if Krishna loves me, then my spiritual life will be like really easy, and I won't suffer when it comes to the time of death, and I'll be chanting Hare Krishna before I go to bed. Then I will just wake up in Goloka Vrindavan. I go to sleep thinking of Krishna, and when I wake up in the morning, I'll be running with Krishna in the fields. So, but it doesn't happen like that, generally. And we see in the Bhagavatam over and over again, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita also, people are going through stuff. And they're not losing faith in Krishna. So we have to come to that point of developing faith in Krishna, faith in the Guru. And in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada said, faith comes from association with devotees. So, you know, yes, we need friends, but we need to choose our friendships carefully. Association, and then the nectar of instruction. We get a lot of instruction about association, avoiding prajalpa, avoiding people who are not able to help us advance. And that may not be because they're bad people. It may be because we both have the same difficulty. We need to associate with someone who has strengths in the areas we have weaknesses. Right? Maybe my weakness, their weakness are the same. So we need to kind of find somebody who has a strength in the area where I have weakness. Or it may be that my weakness and their weakness is the same, and we can help each other because I understand where you're coming from and you understand where I'm coming from, and we can work together on this, right? There's a principle of like Alcoholics Anonymous, get all the alcoholics together and try to get them to help each other. So whatever it takes, we have to choose our friendships carefully, and we have to protect our faith and trust very, very carefully. And I strongly recommend that in order to protect your faith, you get off Facebook. Because Facebook is its association with morons. You know, and you know, you have so many friends, but they're not your friends. You don't even know who they are. They could be anybody. I have anyway, I won't go on about it, but it's very dangerous to one's faith. Hare Krishna. That was a long answer, sorry. I should end here. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.